Hurricane Dean brings Endeavor home a day early. A volcano could make airliners flying over Alaska late. And an airframe parachute records another save. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plagg. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation from Monday, August 20th, 2007. Concerns over Hurricane Dean's projected path led NASA Saturday to make plans for an early end to Space Shuttle Endeavour's mission. Astronauts Dave Williams and Clay Anderson performed one more spacewalk Saturday to install an external wireless instrumentation system antenna to the International Space Station and a stand for the shuttle's robotic arm extension boom. They also had time for a quick gaze at the Category 4 hurricane causing so many problems. While original plans called for Endeavor to land on Wednesday, Hurricane Dean appears to be heading toward Houston. NASA wants to make sure the shuttle arrives back on Earth before Mission Control closes down in preparation for the storm. NASA's Plan A is now a landing in Florida at 11:30 a.m. Central Time on Tuesday. If Hurricane Dean does in fact hit Houston, NASA has plans to move key flight director personnel to the Kennedy Space Center, where they could assist in Endeavour's return. Control of the space station would be handled by a NASA team at Russia's Mission Control, which is just outside Moscow. International flight paths over Alaska could soon be disrupted by the Pavlov volcano. The Alaska Volcano Observatory is calling recent thermal readings consistent with a vigorous eruption of lava, according to the Associated Press. Seismic activity was first noticed on Tuesday. Fishermen in the area on Wednesday reported glowing lava on the mountain's southeast side, and pilots have reported a weak plume of ash below 20,000 feet and drifting 5 miles to the southwest. A massive eruption by the volcano, located about 590 miles southwest of Anchorage, could disrupt air travel, but is not expected to threaten any towns in the area, with a possible exception of a light dusting of ash. Volcanic ash can cause a flameout in a jet engine. The FAA says it has issued advisories to airlines, and it is monitoring the situation closely. Pavlov's last eruption was in 1996, following a series of eruptions in the 70s and 80s. It spewed ash as high as 49,000 feet during a 1986 eruption. The Cirrus airframe parachute system has recorded another save. The deployment happened Friday night after weather conditions deteriorated over Nantucket, Massachusetts, according to the Associated Press. A representative with Cirrus Design confirmed the aircraft involved was an Integra-equipped SR-20. The pilot and his wife were on a night VFR flight into Nantucket Airport when the weather took a turn for the worse, according to FAA spokeswoman Holly Baker. Reported visibility was less than a half mile in fog and rain. AP reports that the pilot decided to deploy the Cirrus airframe parachute system several miles from the airport. The aircraft came to rest in the village of Siasconset, 5 miles northeast of Nantucket Airport. Baker said the pilot and his wife were taken to a hospital following the accident, but no serious injuries were reported. The FAA is investigating. This appears to be the end, finally, to AirTran's attempt to purchase rival Midwest Airlines. The board at Midwest Air Group agreed late Thursday night to a buyout deal from TPG Capital Northwest Airlines Corp., which upped its offer to $17 per share to fend off a last-ditch bid for Midwest by AirTran. Under terms of the deal, Midwest Airlines will keep its name, identity, independent status, and perhaps most important to travelers, its trademark chocolate chip cookies, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Midwest Chairman and CEO Timothy Huxima said in a quick press conference called at 11 p.m. Central Time Thursday, quote, "The cookies stay," unquote. The airline will also retain control over its Midwest Connect regional subsidiary. AirTran CEO Joe Leonard appeared to accept defeat. Quote, "We sought to acquire Midwest because we believe joining the two airlines would have created a unique, efficient, truly national low-cost carrier with tremendous benefits for shareholders, communities, and employees. We hoped the Midwest board would come to share our vision and reach a consensual agreement, just as the majority of Midwest shareholders recognized the value in our strategic plan," unquote. Huxima said the deciding factors in his airline choosing TPG included the right to maintain autonomy as a brand and the fact that the TPG deal was an all-cash offer. The AirTran deal was a mix of cash and stock and contained a financing contingency if it fell short of raising all the needed funding. Up next on ANN, controllers blame fatigue for rising error rates at the SoCal Tricon. Two hijackers surrender to Turkish authorities. And three Marines and a sailor are lost on a search and rescue training mission. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply canal tips, composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 20th, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association tells ANN, five operational errors have occurred in less than 2 weeks at the Southern California Terminal Radar Approach Control. SoCal Tricon is the nation's busiest facility. Three of the five errors happened in a span of 4 recent days, prompting local FAA officials to suspend all training of new controllers for 3 days to assess the facility's training and staffing situation. The errors were spread out in different sectors of airspace controlled by the Tricon. One, in which two aircraft came closer than FAA rules allow, occurred on the final approach path into LAX, and one on the approach into Santa Ana, Orange County, John Wayne Airport. NATCA facility representative Steve Merlin blames fatigue. Quote, "We have had mandatory 6-day work weeks for a few months now, and that has led to fatigue and a loss of focus, and has reduced our margin for error to a bare minimum," unquote. Merlin said all but one of the facility's airspace sectors has training that goes on constantly. There are 40 trainees on board, with more to come, for a total of nearly 60 within the next few months. In the Empire area, the FAA is training on all positions. Plus, a group of veteran controllers are being trained on the newly consolidated Palm Springs sectors, the result of what NACA calls the FAA's rushed efforts to move the Palm Springs radar control responsibility into the SoCal Tricon. In three other areas, the veteran controllers are also being trained on new sectors while they train the new hires on old sectors. In at least two of the operational error incidents, a handoff or assist was needed but not staffed by the FAA supervisor, according to the union. One involved a new hire who was on his own on his first radar scope, and one occurred while training was being conducted. Merlin added, quote, "We have had on-the-job training instructors asked to have a day of just working traffic because they're burnt out from training and they've been told no by the FAA and forced to train against their wishes and judgment," unquote. The hijacking of a Turkish MD-83 airliner, an Atlas jet flight headed to Istanbul, ended without bloodshed Saturday morning. AP reported that 6 crew members and 136 passengers were on the flight, which departed from Erkan Airport in northern Cyprus. Once in the air, the two hijackers said they had a bomb and demanded the plane be diverted to Iran. After a failed attempt by the hijackers to enter the cockpit, the pilots were able to land the plane at Antalya Airport in Turkey. Upon arrival, the hijackers released women and children, and many others escaped. The Turkish Ministry of Transportation said the pilots then escaped through the cockpit windows. The hijackers held several crew members and passengers hostage for over 4 hours before finally allowing them to leave and surrendering to authorities. One of the hijackers is reported to be Turkish, the other a Palestinian with a Syrian passport. Motives were not immediately determined. A civil aviation official told CNN it was not clear if the hijackers had a bomb, although they did have knives. The two men, who told passengers they were members of Al-Qaeda and had placed explosives on the plane, are being questioned, along with a passenger said to have ties to the men. Three Marines and one Navy sailor were lost and a fifth injured when their HH-1N Huey helicopter crashed near Yuma, Arizona Thursday afternoon. The Huey was equipped for search and rescue operations, and the crew was conducting a routine training flight near the U.S. Army Yuma Proving Ground. The cause remains under investigation. The Huey, which was proven as a capable gunship and evacuation helicopter in Vietnam, is capable of operating in high-altitude areas and in high winds, and continues to be an integral part of the U.S. military's helicopter fleet. The last accident near the Yuma base occurred in June 2005, when a Harrier came down in a residential neighborhood. That accident resulted in no injuries or deaths. A subsequent investigation showed the jet's control system failed. Six general aviation airports in Illinois have been given Security Awareness Partnership Awards for their vigilance in reporting suspicious activity to the TSA's 24/7 Operations Center and to local TSA offices. The airports are Quincy Regional Baldwin Field, Galesburg Municipal, Mount Carmel Municipal, Southern Illinois in Carbondale, St. Louis Regional in East Alton, and Canton Ingersoll. All six participate in the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association's Airport Watch Program. Among the suspicious incidents investigated, Quincy staff received unusual telephone calls regarding flight instruction. And at Galesburg, an individual observed taking photos became irate when questioned. In each case, investigators determined there was no threat. Rob Hackman, AOPA's Senior Director of Regulatory Affairs, says the program is proven. Quote, following the voluntary steps in Airport Watch could help prevent future federally mandated restrictions, unquote. Still ahead, Northwest extends an olive branch to flight attendants. A World War II mystery is solved by a California construction crew. And North Carolina is set to retire its Canadair Super Scooper. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, August 20th, 2007. I'm Paul Plack. It's not often we get to report a positive development in the story of Northwest Airlines and its flight attendants, but this story is one. Northwest Airlines CEO Doug Steenland sent a letter last week to the 7,000-member Association of Flight Attendants Union, inviting them to meet to discuss ways to improve the attendants' working environment. And it looks like the meeting will actually happen. Flight attendants will likely want back the pay they gave up in Chapter 11, but Steenland is encouraging union members to think of some cost-neutral suggestions. His letter was quoted in the Detroit News. Quote, specifically, I'm writing to reiterate our invitation to the AFA to meet with the company to discuss these topics, both within the context of the contract and in a broader sense that covers all aspects of the flight attendant's relationship with NWA, unquote. Kevin Griffin, president of the Flight Attendants Master Executive Council, said they'd love to meet with a carrier. Quote, we're hoping that there will be some substance to talk about. We'd definitely like to talk about quality of life, unquote. This exchange has to be seen as a thaw in the relationship. The union was calling for Steenland's resignation as late as last month, accusing him of mismanaging the airline. Steenland says Northwest will need to hire more than 1,000 new flight attendants by the end of the year, and received 70,000 applications this year. A construction crew laying pipeline near the Pajaro River in North Monterey County, California, unearthed the remains of a World War II-era Douglas SBD-5 Dauntless in early July. The Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency collected and secured the artifacts, which were discovered in the middle of farmland. According to the San Jose Mercury News, items recovered included a high school class ring, bullet casings, a can of Spam, landing gear, a burnt parachute, spent flares, and bone fragments from the pilot and co-pilot. The plane, which crashed during a nighttime training mission more than 60 years ago, had been an unsolved mystery. The water agency has begun the difficult process of tracking down the living family members of the two victims, Delbert C. Goodspeed, who was 21 at the time of the accident, and Robert Henry Paulson, who was 22. The two men flew from a naval air base in the Central Valley for a training mission with the rest of their VB-18 squadron, but they never returned. Jack Green, a historian for the U.S. Naval Historical Center in Washington, D.C., told the Mercury News, quote, "Something clearly went wrong. Toward dawn, it appeared that the plane just slowly banked to the left, which would indicate the pilot was probably unconscious," unquote. The Douglas SBD-5 Dauntless was most famous for its torpedoing of four Japanese carriers during the Battle of Midway, and was primarily designed to attack surface ships and land targets. Green told the paper that training accidents happened often during World War II, as the U.S. cranked out pilots as fast as possible. Quote, "There were more airplane accidents from training, in fact, than there were in the war itself. Accidents were a fact of life back then," unquote. Richard Hernandez, an archivist with the Pajaro Valley Historical Association, told the paper a shrine will be erected at the site of the crash. Warbird enthusiasts aren't the only ones battling the high cost of feeding big round engines these days. The North Carolina Division of Forest Resources says it plans to retire its CL-215 Super Scooper firefighting aircraft because it's costing the state about $10,500 an hour to fly. The Raleigh News and Observer quotes officials as saying the plane, which was bought for $4 million 10 years ago, is simply too old and too expensive to operate. David Lane, head of forest protection for the division, said the CL-215 gulps down 35% of the division's aircraft budget, but has been used to battle 135 fires and also leased out to other states. According to airliners.net, the CL-215 is capable of scooping up 1,440 gallons of water in 12 seconds and is powered by two 2,100-horsepower Pratt & Whitney R2800 radials. The newer Canadair CL-415 is an update with turboprop engines and a higher payload. Division officials said they would continue through the current fire season with the CL-215 and will then decide on plans to sell the aircraft. The Division of Forest Resources is currently researching alternative replacement aircraft and currently has several smaller aircraft for fire control. Finally, if you fly a rotorcraft or bush plane, don't tell me you haven't been tempted at least once. A helicopter pilot on his way to Traverse City, Michigan, with a female companion, decided to make a lunch stop in the city of Midland on Tuesday. Instead of choosing to land at the airport a quarter mile away from the restaurant, the pilot sat down in a grassy area near a busy highway. The Associated Press reports the pilot then walked with his female passenger to Logan's Roadhouse for a bite to eat. When he came out, police were there, and the pilot reportedly made an excuse about a mechanical problem. When police then said he'd need a mechanic's sign-off before taking off again, the man finally admitted he just stopped for lunch. The unidentified 54-year-old pilot is charged with making an illegal landing and faces a maximum fine of $500 and up to 90 days in jail. Wow, $500 hamburgers. All I can say is, I hope she was really impressed. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, in my weekly talk with CFI Bob Miller, we'll discuss the importance of a stabilized approach and when flaps should and should not be used. And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. You'll find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.